This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Welcome to this edition of the Escape Hour. My name is Tad Lombardo. In the studio with me, helping out on the tools and also co-hosting, is Mark Adams. Thanks you for helping us out today, Mark.
We've got the first time I've been called a tool today.
Well, you know.
Unfortunately, Tad.
I didn't call you a tool. I should work on the tools. Today, Fiona and Russell are both on holidays.
Russell is Rusty?
Well, he is in Greece at the moment.
He's in Greece. Last Facebook post I saw, he was
Germany,
in,
I think, in Berlin, and then now is
he's in Venice as well.
Yeah. So he's been doing it all.
Yeah.
And then Fiona's in Japan. So
wow.
And we're stuck in Melbourne.
Yeah.
But that's not a good thing.
Harrowing.
There's worse places to be, for sure. Absolutely. No, it's a good day. Nice day to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having me on air again. It's good to be
back. Thanks for helping
out. Back in the saddle.
Yeah, it's always good. So you've been well?
I've been very well, thank you. Good. Just busy with uni at the end of the semester, so it's exam.
Yep.
Time well, coming up.
Thank
so.
You more, even more so for helping us out.
No, not at all.
Because
not at
you
all.
Probably have more important things to do, like studying and things like that.
Anything's a welcome respite from constitutional law.
It would be.
Yeah. Actually, it's a funny time to study constitutional law with so many actual constitutional law issues presenting themselves,
absolutely.
Whether it be the plebiscite, which became a postal survey, which is still non-binding. Mm-hmm. I'm sure everyone's across that issue. And issues with whether people have standing to be in Parliament, whether they do have dual nationality. It's a fascinating time to actually be at law school with a constitutional law lecturer who has been advisors to prime ministers and state premiers. So she's a fascinating woman, the woman who's taking us through constitutional law, and she has been there on the ground when all the issues have happened and advising top of the tree. And so she's a great person. She's so passionate about it because constitutional law is not a fun subject. So to have someone who's that passionate who can really bring it to life for you is a rare opportunity.
But I think you're right, especially now, like with the yes vote campaign going on, there's a no vote campaign going on, and you know, obviously everybody has their right to their opinion.
Well, there's a yes campaign and a no misinformation campaign.
Well, that's it. Exactly right. And I think it's quite interesting. Just from my own perspective, I've got a little shop and a little chocolate shop, and on my, the windows I've got my yes votes and vote yes, that sort of thing. And 99.9% of the people, you know, will walk past and give you the thumbs up, and you know, are very much, you know, in tune with what the vote should be.
Yep.
I've had one person come in not happy about it, and I asked her to leave.
Yeah.
Which is my
go
shop.
Go impress
my
someone
rules.
Else.
Obviously, don't come into my space. You know. And do that kind of thing. And,
yeah, absolutely.
Basically, it's just ridiculous that, it, you know, in my mind, it's a human rights issue. It's not
absolutely is
a political issue.
Yeah.
The no side have turned it political. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think it's a joke that we're even having this conversation.
One of the things that's really come out to me is the amount of support from the general community.
Yeah.
And it's funny having dinner last week with some people who were outraged at how people treat LGBTI people and how personally offended as straight people they were that they were having to watch it. And it's like, imagine being one.
Yeah.
And they went, I didn't even think of that.
That's right.
But, well, as long as you're internalizing it on the yes side, I'm happy
for
that. But you're going, we never realized how deep and insidious it can be and how the people who really do want to suppress your rights and continue being the oppressor to a marginalized minority, like the churches. I mean, there are some really great Christians or other adherents of the faiths, but those institutions are the traditional oppressor. They shouldn't be asked for their rights.
And speaking of the churches in general, I find a group or a group of organizations that don't even pay tax have such a voice in our government is quite shocking.
Look, I don't have a god. I don't believe in any of the 4,200 gods.
Yeah.
I find them fine that other people do.
That's fine.
I just wish that if people were so strident about their god, that they would choose a god that wasn't poor. I mean, they're constantly begging for money. I mean, who would like to bend their knee to some broke-ass god? Pick a better one. There are so many other options.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I just think it's just, you know.
Have them all.
People can do what they want. That's fine, but let us all do what we want to do then.
Yeah,
and give us all the equal right to do that. And
your religious right ends where mine begins, and being without a religion is also a right.
Absolutely. It certainly is.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about that.
No, we're not.
We've got some more delicious treats.
Absolutely.
Delicious treats. So who are our guests today?
Okay, today in the studio with us, we've got Harry and Bridge from At a Restaurant in Albert Park.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming in today, taking time out on your...
Saturday.
It's not a day off, let's face it, for you guys, obviously.
No, you've just made your day even worse. No, the busiest day of the week.
It's definitely not a day off for us anyway.
No.
But it's nice to be sort of something a bit different. Of a change, really, to be honest. Isn't it? So it's great.
Tell us about your restaurant.
In terms of Atta, Bridge being my partner in crime, we've been thinking about this restaurant for give or take 3 years.
Okay. And just to confirm, you deal with the food, Harry, and Bridge, you're more front of house, is that right?
Okay. That's correct. So Bridge, basically, the front of house, and you take care of all the financials and making sure, which I'm sort of a big lack, so it's a compliment to me. Just going back, 3 years back, we had another restaurant before called Fusion, on Swan Street in Richmond. We closed that and we were like, we need to do something, in terms of, modernizing this cuisine and to see, because there's so much depth and, there's so much to offer as far as, the country is concerned. And so we started working on the concept and, to see, what's missing or what's a vacuum as far as, which better place than Melbourne anyway.
Mm-hmm. This is a really good point. Tad and I were talking about this off air.
Yep.
People say they love Indian food. I don't know anybody who doesn't say they love Indian food.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
But India is one of the largest cultural groups. It's not just a country. It's a continent. I mean, if we look at before the British came and ruined everything, what was Greater India before Pakistan and everything was hived off, it's a huge part of Asia, which is the world's most populous and possibly culturally influential cultures.
Yep.
It's very diverse. Even the English language is an Indo language when we look back through history, so there's nothing that even in our daily language we're influenced by Indian culture from thousands of years ago. It's a very part of very much so of every Australian's daily life.
Yep.
And we say Indian food, so it's not quite just Indian food, is it? It's a culture of foods.
It's really,
so talk about that, because you've got a particular take, but it's so diverse.
It is, Mark. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that. The reason being, even in the restaurant, when we say things about Indian food, we say, look, guys, it's not just a dish or a cuisine. It's like a United States of India, really.
Yeah. Well, it's like saying European food.
Have
a souvlaki or a crepe.
Absolutely.
They're all European.
Yeah, exactly.
The reason being, I mean, when you think about it, we've got a country with 26 states.
Yep.
And 26 states with 29 different languages, and let alone the dialogues they speak. I mean, the diversity is just enormous.
Yeah.
What happens is, in our part of the world here, people sort of take Indian cuisine is more like a tandoori, and that's like very synonymous. And tandoori is like Indian, but really, when you think about it, the footprint of tandoor is really just the northern part of India. But as you move towards the more south, as it gets more hotter in terms of the climate, their main focus is not even tandoor. They don't do anything related to tandoor. It's more sort of steam, That's the technique, or that's the food they use, more sort of a lighter version.
And the ingredients change.
And the ingredients change big time. I mean, the language change, the ingredient, the way people...
Culture.
It's diverse. So I guess from our perspective, the whole reason why Atta sort of exists from our sort of a concept is, we're not just focusing on tandoor, but, we need to showcase other dishes or other cuisines within the subcontinent and then sort of expose that to this part of the world. And I think that's going to be a big differentiator.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Today we've got some fabulous guests.
We've got Harry and Bridge from Atta Restaurant in Albert Park. We're talking about modern Indian cuisine.
Yes,
and I was just, hoping maybe you can enlighten us a bit more about what that actually means. I think people know what Indian cuisine is, or they have an idea of it, and it's probably a little bit wrong, but
modern word, I mean, people take it differently in different ways. I mean, depending what your take is, really.
Sure.
From artist's perspective, the modern for us is more sort of taking the classics and, you know, and how do we enhance the flavors and, you know, how do we put another layer of, you know, I guess, you know, to make it more palatable for the people. For example, we've got a dish called Secondary Run. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the dish itself goes back 300 BC.
Wow. Okay.
So it's an indigenous dish.
Yeah.
It was cooked by Alexander the Great, you know, conquered India and sort of, you know, it was cooked in his honor by the king. So we thought, all right, so what do we do?
That's a good enough Albert Park.
That's right. Rich, apart from that, what do you do with this dish? So we said, all right, so what we'll do, we introduce modern techniques in terms of cooking this, you know. So we're using confit, and then, you know, and, you know, we're doing sous-vide and all of that. For example, we take a leg of lamb, we sous-vide it, put that sous-vide for 14 hours, you know, so slow cooking, it retains the flavors. And then, you know, we serve in a glass dome with hickory or applewood smoke. And, you know, we've got Dutch carrots and, you know, we've got all of this jazz happening. So I guess the reason I say that, you know, I mean, there are dishes which are perceived in certain way, but, you know, it's very important for us to sort of lift and, you know, make it more flavorsome, I guess.
Was that an intimidating process to take such a storied dish and reinterpret it in a modern way? Did you feel like you'd have somebody who really appreciated the classic would come in and be, I don't know, not offended, but just think that you've ruined it? Like making a Christmas pudding out of chopped carrots?
Nicely put. But, Mark, I mean, the thing is, you know, if you look at fundamentally, the flavors we're not... The only thing which you're doing is, you know, enhancing the flavor profile, if it anything else, you know what I mean?
So it's a very respectful interpretation.
It is indeed, you know. The dish itself, regardless what technique we use, you know, the flavors are not being, you know, taken away from what they are. The only thing which we're doing on top of what is there, in basic, you know, we're just putting another layer of it to complement if there's anything else.
And it's also the way you're plating it as well is very much sort of reinvented than what people would typically envision Indian food.
It is. I mean, you know, one of the, I guess, you know, and I can say, you know, just not from my perspective, from the team as well, you know, the Indian cuisine, the way it's been plated, it's not your typical Vogue dish, if that makes any sense, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the flavors are there, it tastes good, but for some reason it doesn't, or most of the cases, it doesn't look that good. Mm-hmm. So it's very important, you know, to make it, you eat with your eyes, as they say.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So it's very important, you know, to lift and make that thing possible. Mm-hmm. And then once you've eaten with your eyes, I mean, surely it's going to taste good anyway.
Definitely.
So it sets the scene, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that sort of enhances the whole experience for people coming into your restaurant and you know, the whole ceremony of it as well, I guess.
Absolutely. Improved. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and that's that, we take this very seriously anyway at Atta, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, taste is one thing, but all the looks have to be immaculate, you know. And it
was that difficult to achieve, the look that you wanted to, you know, as far as modernizing the dishes? Was that a lot of trial and error or you know, how did that come about?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for example, the Secondary Run took us, because you're talking about this particular dish, it took us nearly 4 to 5 months.
Wow.
The reason it took that small time, I would say, in the scheme of things, because we knew how to cook the dish, but to make it look good took us, you know, that amount of time. So there was many, you know, do we use foam? Do we don't use foam? You know what I mean? Do we do Dutch carrots or do we do something else? You know, do we add red wine or do we do something?
Right.
You know, so there was a lot of trial and error. But yeah, that's the beauty of it. The beauty of it, anyway.
And using the modern techniques of cooking, like the sous vide, and you know, those other types of things that you've implemented, was it difficult to, you know, incorporate that from the traditional ways of actually cooking the dishes, or was that, did that make it a bit easier for you?
I mean, you know, what we do when I say we deconstruct it, you know, we take the points. For example, all right, so this dish has to be cooked slow. I mean, slow cooking is going to be the thing for this dish.
No matter
to
what.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
All right, so what techniques do we use which enables you to do that?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and then obviously sous-vide comes very naturally. So I think that's when I say deconstructing it,
Know,
just trying to understand what's the foundation of cooking a certain dish and see what's available today in terms of techniques.
So you break it up into small steps.
That's
and take
right,
one at a time and build it that way.
That's right. And does it work for every dish? No.
I mean,
but does it work with a good segment of dishes? Yes, it does. You know what I mean? And then, you know, we fail more than we succeed anyway. So
that's trial and error. You know? But you're only presenting the ones that have succeeded. So
that's exactly right.
Which is the important side of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And with that, is it difficult to keep things fresh and new? You know, if you're constantly trying to reinvent something that's always been traditional, you know, is it hard? I guess is it also hard to convince people that this reinvention is just as good, if not better, than the original?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Because people or the guests who come into ATA, they come with a certain mindset. For example, you know, it's like you're walking into an Italian restaurant or you're going to any Indian restaurant. And there are many as far as Melbourne is concerned. So they come with a certain, I don't say a baggage, but a certain mindset to give them different, to try and convince them, look, the tandoori tikka here is not going to be similar to what you've had in other restaurants.
Right.
You know, sometimes it goes good. Sometimes people go, look, you know what? We like a more traditional way of
fair enough.
And that's fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's a personal choice.
Yep.
But I would say many cases, you know, people or guests are, you know, pleased to see, you know, that there's something more happening than, you know, just the basics, really. So
it's fascinating. Yeah. And do you think what you're doing here in Melbourne, you could do at a restaurant in India as well? Or you know, would that translate as far as the modernizing and the reinvention of it all?
I mean, look, what has happened, though, with India, I think, with this the generation change, with Facebook, the information is you know, really available. So people are not just confined to what's happening in India. They see what's happening elsewhere.
Indians are very outward-looking. I mean, wealthy Indians travel a lot.
They do.
And there's a very large, you know, there's millions and millions of middle-class and wealthy Indians.
Yep.
It's a huge country. And people travel. They're educated all around the world. They bring ideas back. They spend a lot of time in the Middle East. I mean, I'm really speaking on your behalf now. Sorry,
no, you're right.
When I was there last, I was surprised how really funky Mumbai is, and like seriously world class, cool.
And you know, in honesty, you know, there are chefs there like Manish Malhotra and things like that. They're doing like in a Bombay canteen. I mean, really an eye opener for the people over there as well. I mean, whether it's accessible to everyone, they're probably not. But you know, the people are traveling and you know, experiencing and going out. Definitely, I mean, there's a huge market there as well.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favorite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favorite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
We're talking to Harry and Bridge from Atta Restaurant in Albert Park, and we focused a fair bit on the food already. We'll probably come back to that as well and follow up, but we wanted to talk about the service in the restaurant. And Rich, you handle the front of house side of things.
Yes, that I do.
Yep. And how do you design the service of the restaurant so that people are getting a unique experience when you're showcasing the modernized Indian food?
First of all, the ATA got in a nice heritage listed building.
Okay.
It's got a nice ambience, and it's a 5-meter high ceilings.
Right.
It's like you are walking in a art gallery.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
into another time.
Nice pictures and collections. Yeah.
Yep.
And we just make it very simple and nice, bright, the place, so you feel like home away from home.
Yeah.
We got a nice trained staff. They look after the guests because you are having a nice flavor food, but with the food you have to have a nice service as well,
sure.
So you feel like you get taken care of you over there,
and it's well honed service, I'd imagine, as far as what you do and how it's done, so that it's consistent as well. I think that's one of the biggest things to maintain is consistency.
As Bridge pointed out very well, I mean, the one sort of absolute paramount for us is, you know, the entire experience. It's not just a good food. It's not just a good service. It's not just, you know, the good ambience. It's the whole package. And that's the way the world is nowadays anyway. You know, I think what Bridge basically pointed out just then, you know, the delivery of the product or the dish is so important for us. And it's very personalized, you know. For example, we get regulars, you know, they're greeted as if they're coming into, you know, the friend's house or something, you know what I mean?
Indian hospitality is legendary, though. I mean, Indian hospitality is something...
It's special.
Absolutely. It's world-class.
And then the
very welcoming.
10 minutes, you know, 5 minutes in, they talk to, you know, whoever they're talking to in terms of the waiting staff they've got, and they're comfortable. I mean... You go to a fine dining place. It doesn't need to be intimidating, you know what I mean?
Right.
It has to be comfortable. As soon as you're in the comfort zone, then, you know, you're relaxed. And, you know, the menu itself, if I talk about it, Pat, you know, it's very small menu, unlike many other places where you've got, you know, 100 dishes on offer. So people are relaxed. The last thing you want, you know, just going through pages after pages after pages, and then, you know, you're stressed already anyway, you know what I mean? So,
or overwhelmed. Earlier you were talking about the regional differences in food and that you've got a modern approach to things. Which regions have you looked at in particular, or have you looked at India's rich history across the country?
Look, I would say the Indian rich history across the country. The reason being, if you look at some of the dishes which are influenced by Bengal, which is, you know, the east of India, and then you've got tandoori dishes, for example, are more focused towards the north. But then you've got Jinga Koka, as an example, is more
prawns.
Sort of prawns, you know,
south.
And that's from the south, Goa sort of dish.
Right. Yeah.
And the one big thing for us going to be the seasonality in the menu.
Right.
And the reason we do it, it's a deliberate attempt. Number one, you know, it keeps you in line with what the produce are in terms of, you know, what's available in the market at that time, but also keep us challenged, you know, and from a customer's or guest perspective, you know, it gives them variety and, you know, it keeps in line with, you know, it's not the same offering every time I go to this restaurant. So there are many sort of things which work in line, or sort of aligned together. But just going back to what you said, Ted, you know, in terms of customer experience, that's absolutely important. Whether it's offering wine, whether it's presenting the menu, whether it's the ambience of the place. For example, you know, people come in, they go, oh my God, you know, it feels like we're walking into an art gallery. You've got a painting from, let's say, Leth McGregor, which is one of the upcoming artists in Melbourne. You
know,
it's 4.5 meter long.
What?
Wow.
Yes.
It's a lot of paint.
That's incredible.
It's a lot of paint. Just one painting I'm talking about. Yeah. No, it's 1.3, 1.4 meter high. It's huge. Yeah.
It's like the wall.
It is indeed, yeah. It's a huge painting. And then, you know, we kept it minimum, but then made sure every artwork or every piece which goes on the wall, or, you know, whether it's like, you know, oak or whatever, it's there for a reason.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it makes a statement.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the whole thing. It's the entire experience, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say.
It just enhances.
Yeah, absolutely. What you're doing.
Yeah. And I guess, too, the other part of that is, you know, with social media and with, you know, these avenues for people to get a bit judgy about things, you know, which I'm sure all rich restaurants deal with.
Human nature.
Yeah, exactly.
Do they ever do that?
Yeah, unfortunately, probably too much. But I guess it's, you know, it's keeping things fresh and unique and doing things that, you know, a bit of wow factor, I guess. That's
absolutely, you know, and people, you know, the expectation is always there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And how you meet the expectation and what it takes to meet them is an interesting dynamics, you know what I mean? Whether it's restaurant or any other place for that matter, really.
Yeah.
But, Bridge, you must have a lot of that being front of house, welcoming guests for the first time and setting their expectations as you walk them through and seek them. So what's the biggest challenge with introducing modern Indian when people have such a preconceived notion of Indian food?
We have to just explain them the food taste and flavors. They're still authentic. The modern presentation, it's a bit dish construction, so enhanced flavors and looks nice. So first of all, you come in, wherever you go, you eat with eyes, and then you can just enjoy the actual flavor. So lots of people guest asking questions. It's called modern. So how do you keep the original flavors and taste. So, yeah, we have to explain them, take the particular dish, and like Harry said, chicken tiran. So what we are doing with the deconstruction with the chicken tiran, still you can enjoy the enhanced flavor.
Mm. Yeah. Right, okay. And most people find that, well, I guess if they're coming to a restaurant that bills itself as modern Indian, they're already pre-across the idea this isn't going to be...
You'd hope so.
Traditional, because it's in the label.
Yeah,
that's right. I mean, Mike, the thing is, you know, we need to understand, as soon as people walk in, it's setting the scene for them.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, if you look
So there's no big Ganesh at the front.
That's right. There's no Ganesh, and there's no... In reality, there's only dining area one, which has got four pictures of India. Everywhere else in the entire restaurant, there's no footprint.
Right.
Okay, now why do we do that? I mean, what's the reason? I mean, we should have been putting pictures left, right, and center everywhere, you know, because there's so much offering as far as Indians are concerned.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But to keep, how do we justify modern, you know what I mean? That's the whole idea.
Yeah.
You come in, it's simplistic, it's minimum, but, you know, let the food come, and then you're almost in the zone. You could see it's not a typical traditional Indian restaurant. There's more to it.
Yeah.
And then it's an ambience and match with the dishes and the wine list. I think it's just the whole thing comes together and, you know, enhance the experience, really.
We're going to go for a few messages. When we come back, we're going to talk about your travels in India and how that's changed over time, because India is probably one of the most rapidly advancing countries in the world.
Yep.
I don't think anyone argues with that. And it's a fascinating, huge place. So we're going to hear about your travels. You're on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joining us in the studio today, we are talking modernized Indian food. We've got Harry and Bridge from At A Restaurant in Albert Park. And we want to get some of your travel tips for India. You know, what are your favorite spots and recommendations and things when people go and decide to travel to India and experience it on the ground?
I mean, you know, Ted, I can say you can do the classics like Taj Mahal.
Yep.
And I mean, that's obviously should be an absolute top listed, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, it cannot not go to Taj Mahal and go to India, you know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
That's like such an important thing to do if you're traveling that part of the world. But then, you know, from my perspective, look, I come from the north of India called Punjab. So, you know, things like you can go to Golden Temple. I mean, you know, it's very spiritual.
Amritsar,
yeah. That's, I mean, the reason I've connected being in a cooking business, you know, Amritsar is the food hub or the foodie hub. It's like, you know, Melbourne to, you know, Victoria or to Australia. Amritsar is to Punjab, you know what I mean? If you're wanting the really good street food, the hospitality to its maximum, then, you know, really.
Isn't that where the Oberoi family come from originally?
Yes, it does, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the hotel chain. The
right.
Hotels, yeah.
I didn't know that.
I think they still own the Spring Street, the
Windsor?
The Windsor Hotel.
Yeah,
that's an Oberoi Hotel.
I think they bought this not a while ago, I guess.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
Oberoi, really, really high-class Indian hotel chain. Extremely well done.
Oberoi or Taj. Mm. And, you know,
or Taj.
Yeah, that's right. Taj as well. Absolutely, yeah.
Big names.
Yep.
So, look, I would recommend definitely, you know, you go to Taj Mahal, but also, you know, make an effort and go to Golden Temple. It's such a spiritual, an experience, really, in its own right. And, you know, it just introduces you to the Sikh community and the culture and the way of living and, you know, why they do certain things and what's the reason, you know. It's important. And, you know.
And don't ask for Mr. Singh's shop. Or Mr. Singh's restaurant.
You don't. There isn't.
You'll find one real quick. Yeah. It might not be the right one.
They'll be in every corner.
Mrs. Carlos. Yeah, like, oh.
So, yeah, I would say that. And then, again, you know, you can do Rajasthan. Rajasthan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the forts, you know, the
desert.
The desert is just amazing there. Mm. And then you've got south, you know, I mean, I can just go on and on, really, on this.
What's the lake in the north that you can do houseboats on and things like that and spend some time?
Dal Lake, in Kashmir.
Yeah, Kashmir. It's Kashmir, okay.
Yeah. Kashmir. Yep. I mean, Kashmir is a bit, I mean, look, it's a bit, it's good. I mean, the reason I say that, you know, I mean, if you're going that,
that British border.
Yeah.
This should never have been there.
Yeah.
But just make sure you're reading the travel, you know.
Warnings of the day.
Register with DFAT, is that what you're saying?
So my ex-boyfriend went with his mum houseboating through Kerala.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. Like this two-story amazing house, but with Wi-Fi. This is like 10 years ago.
And then you can rent out and then, you know, be there for like a couple of days or week, whatever, you know, they're just great. I mean, so there are a few things. I mean, depending on what part of the, India you're traveling.
Yeah, and during the break we were talking about, you know, your travels and immersing yourself into the culture, and you can't really do that unless you're there.
Yeah.
And how important that is to actually get an understanding of not just the food, the people, and the hospitality, and all that sort of thing. Yeah, and it's it is an incredible place to travel to, and like you say, you have to be smart about it as well, depending on which region you're going to. And,
exactly.
And, but that's like anywhere.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, you're enjoying 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.